Mics are live.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It is 1:31 p.m., Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Collins, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. My only opening comment is welcome. Look forward to hearing your material today. Any opening comments, Commissioner?
I don't have any opening comments.
Commissioner Christman?
I'll just say thank you for being here, and we've talked about the subject some in the past and with other utilities too, and I think you're aware of where we're at on the others, and you're the third one as far as the timing of your renewable rider, and so I guess here we are, and we'll wait to hear what you have to say.
Okay, this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, we will have staff introduce themselves, as well as company representatives that are present. We'll start with those present here in Bismarck, and then I believe we have some on the phone bridge as well.
Victor Shook with Commission staff.
Stuart Tomerdahl with Otter Tail Power.
Bryce Haugen with Otter Tail Power.
Darlene Mendelke, Otter Tail Power.
Okay, and on the bridge line, I don't know how many, so.
Harvey, are you on the line?
Yep, Harvey McMahon with Otter Tail Power.
Is there anyone else on the line?
No, just Harvey.
Okay. That's always the mystery. We just don't know who else is out there, so. All right. Again, since you go first, you can start with your presentation.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. And thank you for the opportunity to be here and just share a little bit about our renewable rider today. As you see, we do have a presentation that we have put together to kind of hit some of the high points of this particular filing. We're certainly aware of the area of focus that you as a commission have had on these other matters, and I don't know if we're the tiebreaker utility here or what, but I'm going to turn it over to Darlene and Bryce. They're going to walk us through the presentation today, and then we'll certainly address any questions that you have as we go through.
Sounds good.
With that, I'll turn it over to these guys.
I'm just reviewing our agenda today. I'll provide some background information, the summary of the existing components, facts about the Maricourt Wind Project, an overview of the PTC methods, the bill impact to a residential customer class, avoided fuel costs, a revenue requirements comparison, the recent and proposed rates, and then a summary of our request. So just a little background on our renewable resource cost recovery rider. It originated in 2009 with the effective date of February 1. The most recent updates, that would have included three wind farms, and those were rolled into our rate base in our last rate case, which was about steps or the updates of the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And now this update will be our 12th update and includes the addition of the Maricourt Wind Project. The current rider components now include the true-up balances and associated carrying charges from prior periods. And then, as ordered in the last rate case, PU 17398, the rider tax, the difference between the accumulated deferred income tax, ADIT, asset balance related to production tax credits, PTCs rolled into the base rates versus actual ADIT asset balance for Langdon and Ashtabula wind projects. And then there's a credit balance transfer that was brought in from the North Dakota Environmental Cost Recovery Rider. And that's what's in this current plan.
Darlene, what's your position?
I'm a rates analyst.
Okay. And Bryce, are you an attorney?
Rates analyst.
You're a rates analyst too. Okay, very good. Thank you.
And then Harvey's, I wrote it down because his His title is Manager of Renewable Energy Construction and Operations.
Okay. So Stuart's the only attorney in.
So?
Aren't you attorney? No. Okay.
Carries. Yeah.
You're the only one?
I'm not up there.
So. In other words, we're safe.
Yes, indeed.
Hiding out.
Sort of safe. He's looking back there.
Are you an attorney too, though?
No.
No. You're an environmental person.
Nope. Manager Regulatory Administration.
Okay.
So, yep.
It'd be easier if you just tell us.
I tried to test my memory.
Yeah.
So far, I'm failing. Oh, I did know.
Smoother this morning.
Yeah. I did know that. What?
Things went smoother this morning.
I used all of my brain power this morning. God.
Please continue.
So we'll go on to slide six here. This is an overview of the project, and I'll cover the slides here. Harvey is on the phone. Is had to write down his title because they call him the wind guy. So if there's more technical questions, but we'll cover on this project, the Merriport Wind Project, received an advanced determination of prudence in 2017, and the case numbers are listed there on the bottom of slide six. This is a 150 megawatt wind project, has 75 2 megawatt turbine generators. It's near Merriport, North Dakota. The expected energy output for this project is 666,000 megawatt hours annually. And you see on the bullet point here, fourth bullet point, the net capacity factor is 50.7%, which is it's a very good capacity factor. A couple of our existing facilities are in that 29 to 35% capacity factor, and they're some of the best in MISO. Mm-hmm. So this one, just with technology improvement type things and location, this is what our capacity factor looks
like.
Go ahead.
Do you attribute more of that to the location or the technology?
Yes. Maybe Harvey could even speak to that.
Yeah, and I don't know if I heard it right, but our existing wind farms are about 40%.
Oh.
And I thought I heard 29 to 30%. So the new wind farms are in the 50% due to longer blades and different technology. However, in order to get that, you know, if you're looking in Iowa, Iowa has lower wind net capacity factors than North Dakota. So it's a combination of location, but certainly longer blades and better technology is improving the net capacity factor for all these wind farms.
Do you know offhand what the average capacity factor is for North Dakota wind facilities overall? You've alluded to better than the MISO average, but just within the state of North Dakota, assuming the wind is fairly consistent from east to west?
You know, even across North Dakota, you can't really give an average because there are certain areas that are much better than others. I don't have a real good handle for net capacity factor on an average basis. I just know what our wind farms do. However, I also know that there are people that are repowering, which are going to longer blades, and they are seeing in the same location anywhere from 4 to 8% net capacity factor gains.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to slide number seven, then. This is the status of the project. Here we show that there's 50 of the 75 foundations are complete. See a couple other metrics of where the project is at right now with collection roads. 80% of those are complete. The O&M building pictured here is about 40% complete. Once we get into the project schedule, turbine component deliveries are in June this year, commissioning hard happening later in the summer, and then expected to be operational in late October. As far as where the project budget is to date, it's the total spend is at $258 million projected. That's below what was approved in the ADP. I'm expected to come in lower than what was approved in that process.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it was approved at?
290.
I think we had 270 or 271 in the ADP, and then staff had a consultant. I forget his name, but I think that he said the project made sense up to 284 or something like that. So,
yeah.
The numbers from ADP. Once in service, the AmeriCorps project will receive production tax credits. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with those.
A little bit.
Yeah.
We've heard of them.
Have you?
Yeah.
So on slide number 8 here, So once the project is in service and generating, we'll receive production tax credits for the first 10 years of its life. We have a couple of methods for including those production tax credits within the rider. In the past, we had the pass-through method. This is item number 1. This was used for the Langdon and Ashtabula wind farms, which went into service in 2007 and 2008. The thing about the pass-through method is that it's nice in the first few years, but then you experience year 11, which mm-hmm. we just went through with these ones as they expired in 2017 and 2018. And so you see the rate increase in that year 11. The alternative methods, number 2 is the levelized. For the AmeriCorps wind project, it'll produce about $180 million of PTCs over the 10 years. And so the levelized would put about $7 million a year for the 25-year life of the facility is how. So $7 million a year is a credit to tax expense with those production tax credits. We think that that's a good alternative. We actually had proposed that back in 2007, and at the time it was hard to get past that year one difference between if you put them in as generated, the rate is here, and if you put them in levelized, the rate's way up here. And that was why we didn't do levelized in the first place. Huh.
Do you remember, were any of you here? Hmm. No? Interesting. Curious if I think you know if staff where staff was on that.
They were. I have no idea. So it was that was back in Diller's time. I tried to find testimony or anything, and I was not able to find anything discussing the reason why the commission was against the idea.
Okay.
But it was specifically in the settlement agreement in the rate case that we'll not be doing levelized. The company proposed it mm-hmm. in the rate case. And it was spelled out in the settlement that we would not do that.
Do you use it in your other, like, does Minnesota do it?
They do the pass-through method. Pass-through.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
And even in, so we've got riders in place for AmeriCorps in Minnesota and South Dakota and had proposed the various methods and as generated or the pass-through method is what they had selected in very recently within the last couple months. Mm-hmm.
They just aren't watching us close enough.
Right.
Haven't learned from Randy's brilliance and Victor's. The shook look hasn't taken hold yet.
And it could be. I mean, because I think when we look at it and you see that, when you see that year 11 happen, you don't want that to happen to you again. So, I mean, I think that.
Yeah.
So we certainly, when we look at the levelized or the shook look, think that those are good alternatives to the pass-through. So levelized, the shook look, then that method really links more the production tax credits to the return on rate base. And so it's not a straight $7 million a year. It's more get the production tax credits when the rate return on rate base is highest. And in that method, We think that intergenerational issue is what's most important at this, as we've been listening to conversations, and we and the Shook-Look, trademark Shook-Look method best addresses that by providing a consistent cost through the 25-year life, and it matches, actually another component that we're going to talk about here in the next couple slides is it matches the reduction to the cost of energy that occurs over the life of the project. And we've got some numbers on what occurs with the cost of energy through the life of the project as well over the next couple of slides here.
Before you switch slides, let me ask you just a PTC question. How do you get your PTC money from the federal government?
Well, I mean, we get credits for everything that's generated, and those credits are applied to the tax returns and reduces the tax
obligation.
Yeah, tax obligation, the federal government.
It's not money sent.
So it's only you true it up when you do your taxes.
When they're utilized, I mean, that's really where the cash benefit between us and the federal government happens. It's at that point.
So I'm just going to tell you right now, as much as I would like to see Victor get to have his trademark done name out there and come back for royalties or something at some point, but I think in Otter Tail's case, where we're starting fresh, I think the fully levelized method is certainly most appropriate. I get your argument about the very level amount of recovery, but that could be made with a transmission line or any long-term asset. And that's not how regulatory accounting has worked, to my knowledge, on other assets. And the declining nature of it, you'll, I presume, have other investments within the next 25 years. And those will start out high and work their way down. And I think the fully levelized method makes these wind farms fit into your other whole asset pool the most appropriately.
Sure, sure. And we'll see that in the illustrations that we have here. I mean, and we've talked about, we've listened into some of the conversations of if we do a levelized, then we do sort of see it, it shows kind of like how we do recovery of other investments where the line goes like this, right? And that so that does reflect what a different investment would typically do, typical recovery. And so go into slide number 9. And so what we're showing here is a bill impact to a residential customer. This rider is a percent of bill on the base revenue charge. So on the slide here, it's approximately $69 for a 1,000 kilowatt hour residential customer. And the slide then shows the monthly dollar impact for each of the various methods. The gray line is the levelized, which you can see near about $8 when the project originally goes into service. The Shook Look is the blue line, which is about $5, just shy of $5 when the project originally goes into service. And then the as generated line, which we just have on there as we understand that is not what we're going to be doing here. So we understand that, but want to show how that one works through and hits that year 11. So this reflects really the life of the project if it remains in the renewable rider. This is what the monthly bill impacts would be over the life, just related to the AmeriCorp wind project. No, I actually want to skip ahead just a couple slides and talk about this cost of energy and avoided fuel cost. So with the wind project going into service, it'll produce 666,000 megawatt hours of electricity, which we'll which will cause us not to have to purchase or generate in another method. Average cost of energy is about $24 per megawatt hour. So would be like lines 4, 5, and 6. This is roughly our system sales. So within Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota, we have about 5 billion kilowatt hours of sales. The 2019 system cost is just an estimate. So, I mean, if you looked at any of our filings, you're not going to see $120 million exact. It's for the purposes of the illustration, it's about $120 million. So approximately 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour then is what system cost is today, or 2019 dollars. Going into rows 7, 8, and 9 then, with Maricourt, you can see that we expect about $16 million of less of cost of energy. So the average cost of energy goes from 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour down to 2.08. For our average residential customer, then using 1,000 kilowatt hours per month, that's about $3, just over $3 of savings per month over the 25-year life. And that's what we would, I mean, the $666,000, of course, is an estimate, but that's what we would expect from when it's in service until the end of the project. So after walking through that calculation, then I want to go back to slide 10 and show. So slide 9 had just Maricourt on its own. Slide 10 has Maricourt and then plus the cost, or be less the cost of energy savings.
Right.
And so we can see for the levelized method, it'd be more like once it's in service, about $5 per month. A bill impact for a 1,000 kilowatt hour residential customer, where it would go for the Shook look and as generated more in that like $2 range. And then if we track it through the life of the project understanding that levelized is that's a good method, but the one that makes us pause just a bit is once you get out to 2036, if you say the revenue required for Maricourt is this, and then you add in the cost of energy savings, the net impact to a customer once we get out in that 2036, 2037 is actually a bill credit when you put those two numbers together, is what we see and we look at and we say, well, if we're talking about intergenerational equity, is that something that we want to see here? So under the levelized method, you see where that hits in that year. Is there any questions on...
Why does it go up? Why it's still a credit, but how come it veers up a little at the end, 44 and 45? The levelized method.
Sure. I saw that too. I'm not sure I know why that does that in year 25.
Okay.
It may be because in the first year there's just 2 months of production in the last year. Or I was thinking production tax credits. That would have been the first 10 years. So. Well.
Mm-hmm. There's some end of life, I think.
Oh, extra
costs, I think, that are starting to come into play too at the end. There.
It could be partially
partial year.
Way through just some. Yeah. Funny stuff that happens at the beginning. You know, the beginning year looks kind of funny and the last year looks kind of funny because it's partial year stuff. You know, you're never getting a wind farm online January 1 of any year, and you're never taking it offline December 31st. So that's what I would – this isn't – it's a relatively small change.
Yeah. Regulatory corrections.
Okay. So that takes.
So let me ask you this: your avoided fuel cost is based on today's fuel costs, right?
It is, yeah.
And we're seeing you go in just this instant from 2.4 cents to less than 2.1 cents. So wouldn't the presumption be that we're going to continue to find more efficient ways to do this stuff? And so the other alternative fuel costs are going to lessen, and so the avoided fuel cost is probably not going to be as much in those out years as what we're calculating in now, which is what causes it to go negative. But I don't expect those avoided fuel costs to be as much as you're projecting here. Is that reasonable?
So just so I understand it before I start talking on this, so
yep.
You're using the 2.4 cents throughout the whole 25 years? So you're not adding any inflation or forecast for the average cost to go up, which I would say is extremely likely to happen over 25 years. So I would actually expect this to be probably higher savings. So like, you know, the gray line gets down into that negative 50 cents in year 2036, it would in all likelihood be even more negative.
Sure. So that's it could go, yeah, it could be a 2.4 down. There's other things like, I mean, what happens with other types of generation?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Could the 2.4 mm-hmm. be more like 2 and then reduce? Is I think what you're asking.
Right.
And I don't think we know the answer to where that 2.4
will be. This is all we have to go by.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So it definitely is that point in time based on 2019. And
I think you could make the argument based on just the rate of inflation. Even if you were to give up a little bit of ground due to efficiencies along the way, that the rate of inflation would exceed those gains, resulting in a higher long-term fuel cost than 2.4. I mean, I think you could easily make the argument that it's going to be even 3 or 3.1 or 3.2 or who knows what higher down the road.
Not necessarily in these kind of proceedings, but in like ADPs where we look at fuel costs or MISO costs over time. I'm trying to recall what the last one I looked at was, but it was within the last few months here. In 2040, I mean, MISO cost prices are expected to be in the 40s, I think. Something like that.
I haven't seen any of the long.
I mean, this is just forecasting.
Yeah,
I mean, this isn't MISO saying this is what it's going to be. I mean, right now MISO is pretty close to what Otter Tail is, a little bit higher. So Otter Tail is at 2.4 cents. MISO is about 2.5, 2.6, and that's expected to grow over time.
So do you believe these are conservative numbers on the 2.4? Is that what you're alluding to?
Yes. That's all I want to say. It's just that it's.
So as we get past the time where we're actually collecting anything for these projects from a rider, so you'd still be, I'm looking at these two graphs, are the fuel costs and the rider on the same, like do they wash each other out actually on the bill, or are you just showing like net impact?
Sure.
Are they collected on the same line in the bill?
That's right.
That's what we're going to talk about after.
Yeah, they're not on the same line. But they are on the, I mean, they are netted in on the bill.
On the bill.
You're going to reflect the benefit of those.
But so this is, I mean, I appreciate this second slide here just to see the overall kind of bill impact. But you'll still be collecting one from the rider and one from the fuel clause, right?
Correct.
That's right.
Yep.
Albeit a smaller fuel charge or decreased.
Yep.
Yeah, you won't actually collect anything on the fuel costs for this because it doesn't.
Right.
You'll just
be
spending less.
Correct. Yep.
Because
our average cost. For all of our, to provide the energy goes down.
So. I think that's a difficult part for the consumer, the ratepayer. If your energy cost on your bill is, I'll just throw a number out, 47, but otherwise it would have been $50.
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice it. You really don't even know it's there.
Right.
but it's there. It's the justification to grant mm-hmm. an ADP.
Mm-hmm.
The fuel savings exceed or greater than the cost of the facility. So unless there was a separate line on projected, and that would be next to impossible. Well, Victor, you can work anything.
Oh, yeah, we can make those numbers. Absolutely.
I think what you're talking about might be that we might be writing in the numbers on the bills, though, to make that tile. I think that sounds like an extra line item.
Yeah. You only have one or two, right? Actually receive an otter tail bill, so.
Okay.
And I think that's the difficulty when we look at in theory. So we know as generated, we see what happens in year 11. So we're looking at the other methods. And I think originally what was asked of, I think of Victor probably last January, February was, we see what happens with levelized in that year one. Is there a happy medium? And what does that happy medium sort of mm-hmm. look like? And that's maybe tying the PTCs to return on rate base and so on.
It feels to me like I don't know if you, how much you followed the other cases. I like the Victor method for the very reason that you state. It is a relatively flat cost recovery approach that recognizes the flat benefit profile. Mm-hmm. And I think you receive mixed messages, a mixed message in terms of, well, if the intent is, no, we just want to make it look like other regulatory assets, then we should just tell you we want it to look like other regulatory assets. If we're going to talk about generational rate disparity and truly address that, that's what Victor's method truly does. So there's a difference of opinion on that, which is fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it leads to a healthy discussion, mm-hmm. and I'm certainly not opposed to that. But I think probably more from a commission standpoint, we have to decide what exactly we're trying to pin down and what are we really trying to accomplish. And if it's now we just want to make it look like another regulatory asset, well, then we should just say it. But when we send a message to you and the others that we want it to smooth out the generational disparity in terms of who's paying for what when, then the only way to support that position is to go with the Victor Shook method. I mean, that's the reality of this, and the graph doesn't lie, in terms of projected cost to the ratepayer over the life of the facility. So I think we see it differently. I just have a hard time arguing against the blue line. If our true intent is, mm-hmm. let's make this as fair as possible. And then you could argue, well, other assets just aren't completely fair either, then because of the approach that we've taken in the past.
I think it does both, but go ahead, Randy. I think we're doing both.
I guess I just want to push back on that a little bit. If you only had one asset, yes, then the Victor method would be kind of the way to blend it out. But the fact that the other assets are on a declining curve, and I think it's certainly my presumption that more assets will be added mm-hmm. over these coming decades, I think the fact that you do this consistent with the other assets is what makes the fully levelized method the best way of treating the generations fairly, in that all their assets start higher and decline, and making an exception for one of the assets, I think, tips the balance. And so that's why I continue to think that mm-hmm. that is what achieves both goals.
That's kind of how I see it, too, that we're not, it's not one or the other. It's not that the only way to correct the imbalance in the generational transfer is the blue line. I think the imbalance that is being corrected by both is this spike in the orange that shows up right there. That yeah. like this generation isn't paying and this one is. Mm-hmm. Here we've got the first, this the gray line, the levelized, puts the biggest burden on the existing generation because they're the ones getting the new asset. That's how all the other assets work. And then it declines over time as the asset becomes older. I think that mirroring that, which is how we do other generation resources, I think that just makes the most sense. It corrects the imbalance, the generational transfer, and puts them on a depreciation schedule that is similar to the other, how the other assets are treated. So I think it's just the best option as well.
Well, I think it just has to be explained, though, fairly to the public that here's what we're doing. We're making it look like other assets. Mm-hmm. And it's a rolling process where new assets are added. Mm-hmm. Existing assets are decreasing in cost over the course of time. And I just think we have to be very clear in how we communicate.
But we're also doing
that.
The generational thing. I mean, it isn't that we aren't still doing that. We very specifically are doing both of those goals. Mm-hmm. It isn't just the one.
Well, in a perfect world, I think all assets would be treated. With the Shook look form of accounting, but they just aren't.
Except
and I don't want to.
Yeah, these you know.
Don't get nervous.
Yeah, these assets are. You know, there's a unique aspect because of the PTC element. You know,
right.
with these assets that you don't see with a majority of the rest of the you know the capital investment, and so I think it afforded an opportunity to look at a way to, you know, how can we levelize bill impact for our customers, and you know we're obviously looking at ways to keep our rates as low as possible for our customers, you know, over life, and this kind of, you know, the Victor method, you know, afforded an opportunity to maybe, you know, keep that and take that, aspect into consideration where you don't really have that opportunity with other, types of investments. So, but, you know, spreading over the life of the project, we certainly, you know, we do agree that that's the, you know, the best way to handle the PTCs.
And there's enough wind farms now in the state I get mixed up. What are your old ones that are?
We had Laverne, Langdon, and Ashtabula.
Okay, so on Laverne, Langdon, and Ashtabula, mm-hmm. I suppose at one time the plan for them, if you had charted it out, would have looked something like the red line for each of them, right?
Just for Langdon and Ashtabula,
we got
a grant for Laverne.
Yep, okay. So Langdon and Ashtabula.
Yep.
And then did it follow that way, or did you get some years out and make upgrades that then got recovered?
There hasn't been any repowering of those facilities.
But some are nowadays. We're seeing a lot of upgrades. And so I'd also argue that, like with the blue line, the partially levelized method, there's a reasonable chance that it's not going to follow that. We're going to get halfway through, and there's going to be another spike again because of some upgrade. We're seeing more and more of that. I think it's a possibility that needs to be recognized. And if that happens, then to me it's another argument for the fully levelized method that before the end of this, they might get additional bills on this.
It would also affect the gray line. And you'd see a spike too then.
Right. But it would be a lower number then.
Right, yeah. Right.
That would impact any of the lines.
Yeah, but I mean the spike will start from a much lower number.
Yeah.
So what we will do, and we visited with Victor about this, is we will be making a supplemental filing. Darlene will share between the three methods, so that we have a full record of the three methods and what ultimately is decided here. We'll provide a supplemental filing here, possibly next week, but certainly within the next couple of weeks. That would provide, so our original filing had as generated and all of the supporting documentation for as generated. And we also provided some levelized information, but not everything. So we'll provide the Shook look, supporting documentation as well as the levelized documentation in the supplemental filing so that the record shows all each of the methods.
Mm-hmm. And those will all contemplate an April 1 implementation?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So essentially the...
Okay. If you go to slide 12. Yeah.
Is a week a tough timeline? I don't know how complicated that is to do that.
We've been providing supplemental filings as well as listening into the informational hearings, so we have been accumulating the data. I think it's a reasonable turnaround.
So there'll be quite a jump then in April 20 of 2021 on the levelized method.
Yes, the slide on page 12 will be the filing recovery period, but keep in mind it's only in service for 2 months. So you're not seeing as big of a jump there where you see the average residential bill for the pass-through of 272, the shook look of 297, and the levelized of 401. Mm-hmm. Now, the next is just
What page are you on?
12.
Okay.
That's the numbers that would be in our current filing.
Down here.
Just for illustration purposes, we provided page 13, which would be potentially the next recovery period with the facility in place for the full recovery time.
And that's the spike.
And so that's where you see it go from $4 up to $7, almost $8.
Okay.
I mean, they all jump, but that one is certainly the most pronounced a little over a year from now.
In this filing, too, remember we had that environmental credit, and so that's lessening the rate shock a little bit. It was a pretty good credit, and then we had some billing with our implementation of our new CIS system went in a month late. So last year we had a credit that flows through, so that true-up is helping avoid some of the rate shock. Moving to slide 14, so our current rate is a negative 2.2 or 2.24%, and looking at the three methods, with the levelized being at 5.637 as a percent of bill. And then just to summarize our request, we would request approval of the annual update costs and collections associated with the previous approved components of the rider, addition of the Maricourt Wind Project, applying the shook look, and implementing updated rates effective April 1.
Can you provide the same impact on some of your other classes? I thought we got that from...
Looking through here. I believe we do have that.
But, yeah, I thought we looked at that a while back, but I can't...
We did provide for the industrial class, and
the January 24th letter has...
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
And,
large general services, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Concern, isn't it?
Yeah, that was kind of the biggest. Some of the other impacts. And how many customers do you have in this large general services rate?
I don't know the answer to that. I'd have to get back to you.
Is it hundreds or thousands or a couple dozen? Hundreds in the large general services?
Can go and grab a annual report. I think that'll list the split between the rate classes.
Sure.
Can you give me the date on that filing again?
24th.
24th. Oh, okay. Second supplement.
Correct.
Yep.
We could include, too, in our supplemental filing, you know, what's an average LGS customer, you know, total revenue, and what is this, you know, what is the increase, how does that compare to what their total bill is? Again, I think it's your percentages are going to be
similar,
comparable percentage changes, you know, based on the rate design, you know, if you're applying a percent of bills, so.
It's nice to know. I think it's something we haven't typically included in orders because there's just such variation.
Mm-hmm.
But we've often included, like, the average residential impact in
Correct.
Orders.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I'm not thinking it would be necessarily in the order, but just to know what it is we're going to be
looking at. Well, if it's significant, I don't know if it should be in the order. Let's see what the number is. It's going to be significant.
So,
I mean, today's orders are significant for commercial.
Just a quick customer count. So this was as of 2017. I'm sure it's increased slightly, but residential customers were 45,800. Commercial were 11,400, industrial 979,
yeah.
and other about 500.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Who's large general services? Is that industrial?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's the same?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, yeah, the thing to...
So within the...
No, I'm just kind of thinking about, in you know, depending on what this shows impacts to that particular class. I mean, it's $8 is significant, but it isn't maybe as large as some of these numbers might be for some of these business customers. I mean, you could look at some sort of a supplemental explanation for this, either from us or from you guys to these customers. Because for me, if I'm getting a $250, you know, increase, or wait, $150 is what it looks like it'll be, I'm thinking, wow, that's a jump. I wonder what caused that. But then if I see, like, okay, well, here I'm going to, you know, this was coming at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We're avoiding this even bigger one down the road by changing the course now, then I have a better understanding about what's behind it and a clearer picture. I might still not like it, but I think it makes more sense anyways.
So just looking at Table 2 on that filing, $2,100 monthly base revenue charge. $25,000 a year.
For Table 2, mm-hmm. January 24th, it's so about $25,000 per year right now is their bill, or their base bill.
Okay.
Or you're taking the 2,100 times 12.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yep, I'm with you.
I guess to be exact, it'd be $25,200, but... So that will move to let's say that's about 140 up to 245, call it 105. So $1,260 on an annual basis.
So we're just doing $25,200 base. This is just the base bill.
Right.
Plus the approximately in that year one, it's about $100 more per, so $1,200 on
yeah.
mm-hmm. 25.
I used 105, but I'm just kind of ballparking where these lines are. So.
But these types of customers have a very high cost of fuel savings, too, from the project, right?
Right. It would be that slide. 13 or where we talk
mm-hmm.
about the average cost of fuel, yes.
Mm-hmm.
They would have they would see that as well.
Yeah, like they'd go from 2.4 cents to 2.1 or whatever.
I think it's important how we demonstrate that in an order, for example. Otherwise, people just see what goes up, and they don't necessarily recognize, easily recognize what the benefit is, projected benefit.
Well, if we want the customers to see it, they aren't going to see it in the order either. We'd probably have to do a bill stuffer or something else to communicate with them through your fancy new system.
We could relate back, though, refer back to the original ADP in terms of fuel savings. I mean, it's documented information with the estimated savings of it, you know, the justification for an ADP, but we can work through that, so, however.
Because Julie makes a good point. We lose track of the fact that I think probably have a number of your customers that never even read our orders.
That's not true. I know you probably are right.
Take him up for coffee. One who does.
Yeah, I would agree that the customers don't read it, but how we present orders is how it's covered.
Yeah.
In the news.
Yeah.
And that becomes the communication mechanism.
Right.
Yeah, as well as the bill stuff.
Whatever else.
Right. Otherwise, it becomes a one. You know, here's half of the story without the other half, and then and people. Understandably, get excited, but it's kind of it's a little ambiguous the way it's embedded into the fuel charge or taken off the fuel charge. It's not. Yeah. I don't think any of them recognize. Yeah. They just think, oh, it must have been a little warmer. It must have been a little colder.
Yep.
Okay. Well, did we get through all the slides essentially?
Yep.
Victor, did you have anything you would like to?
I do not. As with the others, I don't have a preference for which method you so choose. It's just some kind of procedural stuff, how you guys want to move forward. I guess, first of all, do we want to have a work session?
I don't need another work session.
I don't know.
Assumption?
We'll prepare. You're going to have to start bribing me to do another work session on this topic.
I'll be very direct. Really. I don't think, honestly, in all seriousness, I don't.
So we'll prepare two orders as before, as with the other cases.
I like the gray line. So that's what I'd like to see in an order.
As do I.
I will let you know.
Okay. So either prepare one or two orders by the March.
Okay. We're in the March.
So our last meeting in March is the 18th. That gives you about a week and a half. Is that sufficient?
We had visited about that. But yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
That'll work.
Okay.
But if you could do it in 8 or 9 days, we could potentially have it on the meeting on the 4th, couldn't we?
Possibly. Yeah.
Either rush now or rush after.
This wouldn't be that's right. April is what we're targeting, correct?
Yeah, April 1, I think, is what the company is asking for and what I think I would prefer as well.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. So, from a timing standpoint, whatever is practical.
It seems like I foresee quite a surge coming up in the middle of March. I don't want to put pressure on you if that meeting on the 4th is too quick, because we don't want the stuff filed with us the night before either, and we never get a chance to prepare.
Our kind of internal procedure stuff becomes tough because by next week, Monday, I need to have an order out, the order or orders out to you guys. So.
We'll get cracking.
I need to file it first.
Well, work with Victor.
Yeah, we'll keep in contact.
I don't want to put unreasonable pressure on, but worst case scenario, we have to have a special meeting, but man, they're tough to schedule.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No. I'm good with either of those dates, personally.
I'm good, too.
Victor,
nothing additional from me. I'm good.
Okay. one last chance for the company. Okay. Then the handout, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding, is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
No.
No objections.
Then the evidence as presented is now a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Seeing no other matters, we are adjourned, and thank you very much.